This is Radio Energy News.
You're listening to Radio Energy News. I'm Owen Garner. The UK government has asked the Supreme Court to rule whether the proposed Scottish and Welsh government's Brexit bills are unconstitutional. The leader of the Labour Party, Jeremy Corbyn, has accused Prime Minister Theresa May of bypassing Parliament when she authorised military action in Syria, stating that she has a flagrant disregard for parliamentary convention.
So it seems the convention established in 2003 and in the cabinet manual is being tossed aside as simply being inconvenient. Yeah.
Extra funding has been announced by the Scottish Government for an initiative aimed at changing the behaviour of domestic abusers, which they say remains at an unacceptably high level. The British government challenged the validity of the legislation passed in Scotland's Parliament, appealing to the Supreme Court for a definitive ruling. The legislation in question could determine what powers the UK devolved parliaments maintain after Brexit. John Gillespie has more.
I'm standing in the heart of Scotland's political landscape, in Holyrood Parliament, where a struggle for the future of the nation's devolution is taking place. In March, Holyrood voted overwhelmingly in favour of the Scottish Continuity Bill, an alternative to Westminster's EU withdrawal bill. The legislation is designed to safeguard Scotland's devolved powers, but Theresa May's government is contesting whether such an act is within Holyrood's current remit, despite the Act's unified backing in Holyrood. MSP Gordon MacDonald of the SNP was among the majority supporting the Continuity Act.
Scottish Parliament's position is that 95 votes to 32, we voted for the Continuity Bill at stage one. So all of the political parties in the Scottish Parliament, apart from the Conservative Party, were in a situation where we've tried to negotiate through Mike Russell with the UK government to try and ensure that Scotland's different economy and etc. is looked after by the Continuity Bill. And it's disappointing that they feel that they've had to do this. They could have had discussions, we could have reached an agreement, rather than them grandstanding as they've been doing for a number of months. They have gone to the Supreme Court. It will probably delay the process somewhat, which is a bit disappointing. Industry wants certainty, and the longer that we have lack of clarity about where Brexit's going, it's going to be very difficult for businesses to make investment decisions, etc.
Despite their long-time rivalry, both Labour and the SNP have sided on this issue, as the vote last month saw a consensus across several opposing parties. Rona Mackay, a member of numerous cross-party committees on culture, tourism and trade, emphasised the importance of protecting the powers of the Scottish Parliament for all parties.
Well, I think it's been challenged because it's the first time a piece of legislation, which was emergency legislation, has been issued. We have to put this bill in place so that if any of Scotland's devolved powers are threatened, they will be protected after Brexit. The Lord Advocate will be arguing in the Supreme Court that it is within the powers of the Scottish Parliament to prepare for the consequences for devolved matters of UK withdrawal from the EU. And he'll argue that very strongly, and we do too. So we think it's very necessary, and it is definitely within the competence of the Scottish Parliament.
A ruling will be made within the next 48 hours, but it's not clear who the Supreme Court will favour. Whatever the outcome is, this incident could set a new precedent for the extent to which the UK's devolved parliaments can chart their own course through Brexit's uneasy waters.
An emergency debate is currently being held in the House of Commons to discuss the UK's military action in Syria. Prime Minister Theresa May received criticism from MP for not seeking a vote of Parliament before launching the strikes. Shoni Maguire has the story.
On Friday night, the US, France and the UK bombed Syria in response to the regime's chemical weapons attack that killed more than 40 people. Theresa May made the decision to launch the airstrikes against the Syrian government, but ducked calls to give Parliament a retrospective vote on the matter. Labour leader Jeremy Corbyn wants them to consider if Parliament should have had the power to stop the UK going to war.
The government's failure to seek, let alone obtain, parliamentary approval to these airstrikes sets a precedent for potential and, I believe, more dangerous future action, not just in Syria, but in other countries where similar situations may arise.
With an emergency debate regarding the Syrian airstrikes now underway, he is proposing a War Powers Act. Daily Mail columnist Stephen Daisley speaks more on what a War Powers Act would actually consist of and why, in his view, Corbyn is pushing for its introduction.
Similar to the one there is in the United States, so that in the future the Prime Minister can't commit military forces to conflict without a vote of the House of Commons. So So the strategy for Corbyn is very much move this away from the rights and wrongs of the actual airstrikes against the chemical weapons factories to the rights and wrongs of Theresa May's decision-making in terms of consulting Parliament and whether she should have come to Parliament first.
While it's widely agreed that a majority of MPs would have voted for military action anyway, the public are more indecisive. A YouGov poll from before Friday's airstrikes show that voters are 3-1 against intervention, while the same poll taken after the strikes came up 2-1 in favour. With the public unable to make up their mind, their MPs being ignored, and potentially more strikes on the horizon, today's debate on parliamentary power comes at a critical time.
Theresa May has issued an apology to representatives from the 12 Caribbean countries which provided Britain with support after the end of the Second World War, known as the Windrush Generation, many of whom were wrongly threatened with deportation and denied healthcare. Our reporter Elise Kennedy has more.
Theresa May's job does not seem to be getting any easier. This week she faces controversy after Caribbean immigrants, known as the Windrush Generation, face threats of deportation after a change in the law which requires them to supply more documentation to gain jobs and healthcare, leaving them without access to these essentials. In a meeting earlier today, Prime Minister Theresa May made an official apology.
I take this issue very seriously. The Home Secretary apologised to the House of Commons yesterday for any anxiety caused, and I want to apologise to you today because we are genuinely sorry for any anxiety that has been caused.
The Windrush Generation are people that arrived in the UK after the Second World War from the Caribbean nations by the invitation of the British government. Timothy Harris, the Prime Minister of St Kitts and Nevis, spoke outside of Downing Street after the meeting to share his concerns.
We hope that these troubling issues that are impacting the migrant population would not surface again.
The reason this is happening is because of a policy change set out by Theresa May where immigrants need to have evidence that they live in the UK legally. Many people from the Windrush generation do not have this documentation. This happened to Michael Braithwaite, a special needs teaching assistant who's lived in the UK for 50 years.
After being part of a school and part of the team and part of everyone, and to have that taken away from you in a snap of a finger, it was a dark, dark place.
In a letter to Amber Rudd, the Home Secretary, Green Party MSP Ross Greer asked how many people have been subjected to wrongful deportation in Scotland. She's yet to respond. Whatever the outcome, this is a problem that the Conservative Party would have rather avoided.
And now for a roundup of today's national stories, here's Adam Zawadzki.
260 jobs have been saved in Fife on the Isle of Lewis as engineering company Biffab has been taken over by JV Driver. Workers in Burnt Island and Arnish, Biffab's current yards, were warned over possible redundancy, but JV Driver has now acquired Biffab as part of an agreement brokered by the Scottish Government. Biffab specialises in building large-scale equipment for offshore oil and gas industries, as well as platforms for wind turbines and tidal generators. A growing number of NHS workers in England have become vulnerable to physical and verbal abuse in the workplace, usually as a result of patients waiting too long. Figures supplied by hospital trusts show a 99.7% increase in attacks, with just under 5,000 more occurring in the UK compared to last year. One nurse tells of her experience.
I witnessed a colleague of mine having been beaten up, having her hair pulled. Drunk patients have been very aggressive, even one throwed a chair to a window.
A 29-year-old man is critically ill in Glasgow Royal Infirmary after being shot in the head in Maryhill, Glasgow last night. The man, named locally as Kenny Riley, was shot multiple times by another driver at a set of traffic lights before the man could flee the scene. Police were called just before 10:30 p.m. to Billsland Drive near the junction with Maryhill Road, with both Billsland Drive and part of Maryhill Road remaining cordoned off today. Police Scotland stated that their inquiries into the incident were still in the early stages. And now, an Isle of Lewis supermarket has withdrawn its baskets after multiple thefts, with the chain losing almost 15 baskets every week. On Facebook, Tesco stated that it had ordered more baskets, but they wouldn't arrive for 6 weeks. In the statement, the Stornoway branch of Tesco requests that, if anyone has a basket, can you please return them to the store? No questions asked on return. Customers have suggested that security tags on baskets could help stop the crimes. So, if anyone has any spare baskets hanging around, you know where to send them.
You're listening to Radio Energy News Programme. The time is 4:30. The Scottish Government has announced an extra £2.8 million investment to tackle the domestic abuse levels in Scotland. The Caledonian System is a scheme which aims to rehabilitate domestic abuse perpetrators. Our correspondent, Mary Thomas, reports.
The funding will be used to expand programmes across Scotland that rehabilitate abusers of domestic violence through the Caledonian System. It's a two-year programme that works with male perpetrators by offering them an alternative to imprisonment. Yolanta Sowick, a social worker at the Caledonian System, believes abusers need to be a part of the conversation about solving domestic violence.
But before, work was done only with women, so it was a victim support and with children. However, the research showed that the system would work better if the help is also for men, so for perpetrators of domestic abuse as well. By helping the perpetrators, we help the victims to stay safe, because this is our priority, to minimize the risk and to help the victims to stay safe.
Instead of simply punishing the abuser, the program rehabilitates the men involved and tries to address their violent behavior whilst improving the lives of the women and children affected. This alternative allows a chance for change and appeals not only to abusers but also victims. We spoke to a victim of domestic abuse who asked to remain anonymous, and she expressed her support for the program and wished it had been available to her at the time of abuse.
I find domestic abuse affects not only the abuser, but the whole family, and you can see that they need help. And with this scheme, I think that's a very good thing, because I didn't press charges for my partner because I didn't want him to lose his job. So if that would have been in place, that would have been a lot better then.
More than 1,200 men have participated in the Caledonian System since its launch in 2011. The rehabilitation program uses exercises and one-on-one meetings to change attitudes and the cognitive behavior of abusers. Yolanta Sowick continues to state why this alternative action is a better use of time and resources than imprisonment.
So in this sense, they are free and they can do whatever they want. However, of course, they have obligations to come to the program. They can learn many things and they can change their behavior, because 2 years, it's a lot of time. But in the meantime, they don't lose their time sitting in the prison doing nothing. So the life is still on, going on. So I believe it's much better than prison, definitely.
With new funding, the Caledonian System hopes to expand its initiative across Scotland, helping more male abusers, victims, and families affected by domestic violence. Is this alternative method and further government investment what is needed to tackle Scotland's domestic violence issue?
UK Government Minister Esther McVie is facing backlash for her comments on the so-called rape clause in a committee meeting held at Holyrood. The Work and Pension Secretary faced angry outbursts from the public gallery after she stated that the rape clause offered women a chance to speak about their ordeal. Joe Anderson reports.
I'm standing here outside the Scottish Parliament, and while it might sound calm here today, yesterday inside was a different scene altogether. During a committee hearing on the rollout of Universal Credit, Work and Pension Secretary Esther McVie faced a barrage of boos and heckles from the public gallery after her comments on the so-called rape clause. Secretary of Disabled People Against Cuts Glasgow, Marion Nesbitt, was thrown out of yesterday's hearing. She spoke to us while on a train down to Westminster to protest further.
We were there yesterday to highlight the injustices and the cruelty of welfare reform and all of its horrors, of which the rape clause is just one. You know, I spoke up and I said, so Esther, no apology for the heartache and the misery that's caused. She had no intention of apologising or answering any of the real questions.
The two-child policy, which caps child credit to two children, includes a rape clause that allows women to claim credit for a third child if the child in question was conceived as a result of non-consensual intercourse. But activists and MSPs have criticised the aspect of the clause that requires women to fill in a non-consensual consent form that details their experience in order to prove they were a victim. McVie claimed that this policy would give victims an outlet to speak about their ordeal, while activists believe the policy is invasive and insensitive to the victims of rape. A demonstration against the rape clause is to be held this Thursday at the Mound in Edinburgh. We spoke to Brenna Jessie, one of the organisers of the demonstration.
Firstly, we should be absolutely clear that it is the rape clause that we stand against, but we also stand against the entire family cap. And in fact, we actually can't get rid of the rape clause without getting rid of the two-child cap. So that is our goal here. The idea that any woman should ever have to prove that they were raped and get third-party verification for their rape in order to access benefits is just absolutely inhumane. We've got a demonstration planned this Thursday at the Mound in Edinburgh at 5:30 p.m. We're encouraging folk to bring placards and bring their rightful anger. We need numbers. We need to show that Scotland stands firmly against this and that our opposition's going nowhere.
Jo Anderson there, reporting on the controversy surrounding Esther McPhee. Still to come on the show, our interview with Commonwealth Games bronze medalist Mark Austin. Now with the update on all the national news stories, here is Adam Zavatsky.
The President of France, Emmanuel Macron, has delivered an impassioned address to the European Parliament in Strasbourg, urging its members to renew their commitment to democracy. He warned that there seems to be a European civil war occurring between liberal democracy and growing nationalism. Recalling the creation of the European Union at the end of the Second World War, he added, "I don't want to belong to a generation of sleepwalkers that has forgotten its own past." Chinese economic growth was larger than forecast for the first quarter of 2018, compared to the same 3 months period last year, according to official figures. China's economy grew by 6.8%, beating the Chinese government's target of around 6.5%, with strong demand from consumers helping the second largest global economy. However, concerns remain over China's current economic situation, with an increasing debt and housing bubble proving difficult for the government to sustain growth at this level. Escalating political tensions with the United States, its largest trading partner, has also troubled the economic outlook for the Chinese export industry. A South Korean actress that was kidnapped by North Korea before escaping has died at 92 years of age. Choi Yoon-hee began her film career in 1947 and became one of the leading actresses in the South. In the late 1970s, she was abducted by the North from Hong Kong and forced to make films for the regime. Her ex-husband, Shin Sang-ok, a notable film director, was also kidnapped from the same city after going to search for her months after, but both later escaped. However, North Korea has never admitted responsibility for the couple's abduction, stating that both had wanted refuge there. Prime Minister Theresa May has pledged £212 million of government money to help secure longer education for 1 million girls in developing Commonwealth nations. At the biennial meeting of Commonwealth leaders in London today, she stated that tens of millions of young people, often girls, are denied the sufficient education that will help them fulfil their potential. She also reiterated the UK's commitment to spend £500 million annually in order to tackle malaria.
Evidence shows that young people need 12 years of quality education if they are to fulfil their potential. I want this to be the summit where the Commonwealth agrees to make that the goal for all our members.
And now, some good news for whisky fans in Edinburgh, as spirits giant Diageo have announced to invest over £150 million in 3 years in their Scottish whisky distilleries. Part of the investment will be used to fund tourist visitor centres in Edinburgh. Callum Adam reports.
Whisky galore indeed. Last year alone, Scotland racked in 1.7 million tourists visiting distilleries around the country, signifying a trend in whisky attraction. The introduction of the Johnny Walker centrepiece will be an addition to the capital's attraction, highlighting the history of the whisky brand in Scotland. Diageo is also looking to upgrade its network of 12 distillery visitor centres in the near future. Four distilleries, Glenkinchie, Cardahu, Coolalla, and Clynelish, will be linked directly to the Johnny Walker venue in Edinburgh, representing the four corners of Scotland. Colin from Visit Scotland explains there is a need for a new whisky experience in Edinburgh.
It'd be nice having something else in the city other than the whisky experience. I mean, the whisky experience is great, but people want to see it right in front of them, you know, whisky getting made and things like that. So at the moment, the only distilleries you can visit within the city are for gin, and that's a little bit different.
Diageo hopes the move will encourage visitors to travel to Scotland's extraordinary rural areas, exceeding last year's impressive figures. Diageo now plans a tie-up with Scottish Enterprise to promote Scotch and to attract tourists from around the world. In addition to Diageo's plans, Holyrood Distillery is planning to begin construction next month on Edinburgh's first single malt whisky distillery for 90 years. £5.8 million was raised by investors for the project. James Sampson from Royal Miles Whiskies explains the diversity of the single malt and why it would be valuable for the city to have.
And with single malts comes variety and comes character, and you know, I think people are just interested in different things and wanting to try different things, and single malts are all different, so they can all offer something unique.
Gary Haggard, distillery manager for Lindor's Abbey Distillery of Newburgh, stated that tourism accounts for approximately a quarter of their revenue.
The distillery is funded to make sure that it doesn't have to rely on tourism, but it is part of the income back into the distillery. I would say overall, as part of our revenue, maybe 20-25%.
And as American humorist Mark Twain once said, too much of anything is bad, but too much good whiskey is barely enough.
Now with your latest sports update, here's Gregor Kerr.
Rangers veterans Kenny Miller and club captain Lee Wallace have both been suspended from the club following an altercation after Sunday's Scottish Cup defeat. The Gers were hammered 4-0 by the rival Celtic in the second of the weekend's ties at Hampden Park, and both players voiced their complaints to manager Graham Murray in the aftermath of the defeat. Both players met with the club's board earlier today. Miller's exit is likely, with his contract expiring in the summer, while Wallace has a year left on his current deal. It is understood that Murray is behind the suspension of both players. World Cup hosts Russia have been charged by FIFA for racist chanting during a friendly against France in St. Petersburg last month. It is the third time that there has been an offence at the stadium this season, with Zenit facing repeated trouble in the Europa League. It is believed that Manchester United midfielder Paul Pogba was one of those abused. St. Petersburg Stadium will host one of the semi-finals at the World Cup this summer. The Colin Tizard trained Q Card has been retired after winning 9 races at the top grade level. The 12-year-old is one of the most popular horses in jump racing and was due to retire at Sandown at the end of the month, but will not race again. Q Card retires with 2 Cheltenham wins under his belt, and he took the King George VI chase in 2015. A 2-time Olympian has become the first American woman to win the Boston Marathon since 1985 yesterday, but the runner-up is the one picking up the headlines. Sarah Sellers is a full-time nurse, but finished just 2 minutes behind the pole position, with a time of 2 hours, 44 minutes and 4 seconds. Sellers ran the race without a sponsor or an agent, and only took part after a younger brother entered. She was a keen track and field competitor in college, but was a mystery to the professional running world until yesterday. With the Commonwealth Games now behind us, many have questioned the relevance of the event itself, despite Scotland's success at the tournament this year. After their most successful overseas games in history, Team Scotland recently touched down today in home soil. Suzanne Oliphant spoke to Scotland's Mark Austin, who got the ball rolling with the country's first medal this year.
Team Scotland won 44 medals on the Gold Coast in Australia, with the first of these coming from triathlete Mark Austin winning bronze. He spoke about his medal-winning race.
Yeah, it was really good. I don't know, it was just kind of, for me, the perfect race, and that's all I really was bothered about, and was executing my best race, so I was just really happy to do that.
Having finished 22nd in Glasgow in 2014, Austin spoke of the differences between the build-up to this Games and the last.
It was really different. I think the run-up was a lot less kind of intense in terms of, yeah, for Glasgow, I'd been waiting for that for like 7 years, because I remember when it got announced, and I really thought I could do that. So yeah, this time was maybe a bit more relaxed, but at the same time less kind of passion and stuff. So it was different, but maybe a slightly more professional approach this time.
There has been talk of the dwindling appeal of the Games, but former Commonwealth medalist turned Herald journalist Susan Egglestaff disagrees.
A lot of the time with these kind of smaller sports that don't get as much publicity, people are maybe not going to go and like seek them out quite as much, whereas with London 2012 and Glasgow 2014, and hopefully with Glasgow 2018, you know, because it's right on people's doorsteps and it's easy for them to find kind of the action, they become a lot more kind of engaged with it.
The 2014 Games promised a legacy of participation in sport in Scotland, but a recent report concluded that the Games had not resulted in a change in levels of physical activity among the population. Egglestaff cast doubt on the Games' ability to have a lasting impact.
I mean, legacy is a funny thing. I mean, there's basically very rarely a legacy when it comes to like major championships being held. So I think it's probably unlikely there'll be much of a legacy from this in terms of, you know, any kind of participation for the strength. But I think it does kind of show that Scotland has the ability to achieve a, you know, like major championships.
Austin hopes that the true influence of the Games will be seen within the grassroots of sport for future generations to experience.
I don't think many people are bothered about coming home famous or anything. They're having loads of fans watching. That's not really the reason. I think it's just to kind of make kids want to do it, and that's the main thing for like the funding and stuff, is to get kids into sport and get more people active. But hopefully that has that effect.
That was Suzanne Oliphant there speaking to bronze medal winner Mark Austin.
And finally, St Margaret's House, a prominent Edinburgh arts centre, was put up for sale earlier this year, much to the dismay of many Edinburgh-based artists. However, with a new site being proposed for the artists, things are looking up. Arts correspondent Erin Kersop has more.
I'm standing here in one of the galleries after talking to a number of artists within the Edinburgh Palette at St Margaret's House, a vibrant creative hub for talented artists. That's exactly what Edinburgh Palette is. A social enterprise and charity, is a community of makers, designers and artists working alongside charities, creative enterprises and small businesses. This community has steadily grown in St Margaret's House since 2008. Hundreds of artists flock through the doors every week, but at the beginning of the year they were told the building had been sold and left with no idea of how or where they would make a living until today. Edinburgh City Council is providing £500,000 as part of a redevelopment scheme to turn Powder Hall Stables into an art hub. Powder Hall Stables, used to stable the horses of the Edinburgh Tattoo, is to be turned into an art and community hub, as the council believes there is a glut of demand for studio space in the city following the decision by Caledonian Trust to sell St Margaret's House. The council is hoping to tally up the remaining £1 million for the Powder Hall Stable scheme from external grants, but has promised the initial £500,000 from the city's Strategic Investment Fund. Andrew Cheney, development manager for the Edinburgh Palette, said he certainly sees a redevelopment of the stables as a positive step by the council. We spoke to David Mola, who is a glass artist.
Annoyed about just losing this building, but on the other hand, I think it can be a good opportunity just to grow and to make something even bigger or even better, because now we know who we are, we know how to work, and we know what we need. So probably I'm going to find a bigger and better and nicer and brighter space.
Move the premises. Change the address. Within the first year since it opened. And you can look around and you see what you see, and I've developed it to this wonderful stage. Will I miss the building? Well, it's a building.
Well, they've helped me a lot to show that I'm currently touring, that I've been touring for the last 2 years. I've made it because I met people here. It wouldn't have been possible otherwise. I know that for a fact. But there's always room for artistic input in people's lives. The more the merrier.
It certainly sounds like a fantastic step forward for the art community and will hopefully benefit those here at St Margaret's House working within the Edinburgh Palette.
In travel news, cycleways are being installed in Leith Walk in an effort to protect cyclists from traffic on the busy road. There have also been train delays between Glasgow and Edinburgh due to a signalling issue, but there has been no indication from ScotRail as to when the service will be up and running again properly. Now, the good weather that we've been experiencing recently is only set to get better, with temperatures reaching 16 degrees today and climbing to a high of 21 degrees on Thursday. So make sure you get out and enjoy the good weather, and don't forget the sun cream. Now, for a quick recap of today's headlines. The UK government has asked the Supreme Court to rule whether the proposed Scottish and Welsh government's Brexit bills are unconstitutional. The leader of the Labour Party, Jeremy Corbyn, has accused Prime Minister Theresa May of passing by the Parliament when she authorised military action in Syria, stating that she had a flagrant disregard for parliamentary convention. Extra funding has been announced by Scottish Government for an initiative aimed at changing the behaviour of domestic abusers, which they say remains at an unacceptably high level. Thank you very much for listening. That's all from the Radio Energy News team. We'll be back with you for your next update at 6 o'clock.
Hear it. Feel it. Listen again at www.radioenrg.net.